What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 34 of The Overview. I'm Chanmian V, and joined, of course, by Fish Sticks here to my right, Flame
hello, hello.
To my bottom, and Mangachu to the, to the bottom right, going Brady Bunch style kind of thing. What's up, Manga?
I'm a good man. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah. What's up, Flame?
Not much. Glad to be back.
God, so chill. Like, what is this, man? So, Manga, I was talking to Manga earlier. Does that thing to the right of Manga look like a window to you guys?
I mean, it's like either a window or a pretty sweet poster you got there. I don't know.
It's a painting from IKEA.
It's okay. A painting from IKEA. It totally looks like a window to me, man. But
that's probably the reflection, because it looks pretty bright.
Yeah, I think so. I think the sun's kind of shining off of it. So it looks like it's from the outside. Very, very cool, though. Well, guys, we're back. We obviously haven't been here for a couple weeks since the interview we had with Nate. So there's a ton of stuff to talk about. Lots and lots of things have been released, announced, just all kinds of events going on the last 2 weeks. So, we're going to go through all the game updates, including a big developer's update talking about Symmetra, but from Jeff Kaplan today. Just kind of, again, talking about some more upcoming things that will be coming soon to the PTR and will be released. We'll also talk about Season 2 a little bit, see how everybody's doing in Season 2, because the end of the season is coming up very, very soon here. And then lots of different news, player news, people leaving teams, and some events coming up here in NA, as well as DreamHack happening this week, too. And then we'll cover just the events like Apex, and maybe some of the other NA events that are going on, like Alienware. At the end, we'll take some Q&A questions from you guys. As always, you can go ahead and tweet those to @ChamMV. Or you can just hang around Twitch chat, and we'll probably take some from Twitch chat at the same time. And for those of you listening on iTunes or whatnot, feel free to email your questions beforehand at theoverview@chamnanv.tv, and we'll take those, and then we'll ask them the following week. So we didn't get any this week. Hopefully this will start up a little bit so folks that are listening on audio can partake in this the live show. Okay, so let's start off with Sombra. So it's been 2 weeks, so Sombra's obviously been released to the wild, as well as all those balance changes that we had been, playing and testing out on the PTR. So I want to get your first impressions on what you guys have been seeing on Ladder, just with the metagame and Sombra and any of the other things. Fishix, you want to start?
Sure. I would look to the pros here to give their...
Okay, I should have started with one of them then, I guess.
Their deep input. I would just say that so far in my experience, the best Sombra play that you're going to see is the sneakiest Sombra. She just really can't fight one-on-one in almost any situation. So the only times I've had trouble running into Sombras on Ladder or in competitive is when they're just playing in a way that they always have that teleporter to escape at any time. If you don't have that teleporter placed, you're just in such a risky position. So in my mind, like, Sombra is a lot like Tracer in that way, that you just want to stay in a position where you can escape at all times. But unlike Tracer, she can't really 1v1 almost any character in the game. But, I mean, I'd pass it to Manga and Flame. Have you guys had any luck playing Sombra on the Ladder? At a high level, I guess?
You can go, Liam. I don't know. I have an answer, but if you have an answer, go for it.
I've been playing her a little bit. She feels like a weaker Tracer. Like, that's the whole thing that's been going around. Like, she doesn't have a lot of kill power, and I kind of slick at Tracer, so it makes everything worse for me. But if you have a lot of team coordination, like if you're just calling everything, like you're all percentage or whatever, and you can combo with like a Reinhardt, you can win games like really easily.
I was a Tracer spammer for a majority of season 1 and 2. So I played her a lot when PTR was out, because once I got I wasn't down with ranked. When everyone's doing scrims and matches, I just try to avoid the servers. But I played her a lot on PTR and a little bit on my alt account, even when the patch went live. She's definitely good. It's just her playstyle is like almost too linear, I think, right now. Again, like you said, with the transponder, you need to have it up, and it's kind of like you treat it the way you would treat Tracer Rewind, in that if you don't have it, you're not really going to go for a fight, because if you die, then that's it. Her damage output's pretty high, though. I had like a really long discussion with IDDQD last week because he's been spamming her a lot in pubs, and he was saying that he thinks her damage might be ridiculously good if you can coordinate, and I definitely agree with that. The thing is, though, I think she's about as niche as most of the other heroes. I mean, probably on like the same level as maybe not Symmetra, but like Mercy, Zen. Like some maps she'll be really good, some maps she'll be pretty bad. The health pack thing is definitely powerful if you can play around it correctly. You get ult from your teammates picking up health packs that you hacked, so you can kind of farm ult pretty fast even if you're not doing much damage.
Yeah, and you get ult from when you pick up a health pack yourself too.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So like you can like her playstyle is kind of weird too. Like there's some maps where she's super strong. Like you'll play Route 66 and there's like that lower path. You like hack the health pack, you go in, take a really bad engagement, take like 100 damage and then rewind back to your health pack. Or you can stand in the hallway and then wait for them to come fight you. And if they try to come fight you, you just bait the health pack because they can't pick it up. And then you get full health. So she's very dynamic. It's just she's a weird hero. But her ult's definitely really good. And I think she'll get picked a lot more on like 2CP maps because if you can just run in on like, think of Hanamura where teams hold up on that high ground. If you just run in there with like bomb the EMP and hit like five or six people, you'll just win the fight right off the bat. So she's good. It's just I don't know how long it'll take to see her. Like you have to play around her completely, I think, more so than most heroes.
I mean, with the current balance of Sombra, I can't believe I like never would have expected this, but I actually think her health pack hacking ability is probably her biggest upside. Just how fast the health packs come back is kind of insane. The small health packs come back in like what, 3 to 5 seconds? Big health packs are like 5 to 7 seconds or something like that. It's kind of crazy. You could just camp a health pack, and if you're playing kind of sneaky, if you've got your transponder, you won't die, and you build alt really, really fast. And I do think that alt, it's gonna come to play. I think teams will experiment with it and will use it to really great effect, especially in cases like you said where defenders might be spawning really close to the objective. It's a way to try and win a fight very decisively, very quickly, and I think that's where she'll find her most utility.
We haven't even talked about the stealth ability. All of those things that you talked about, the word stealth didn't even come up. And stealth was always an ability that a lot of people were worried about, you know, being overpowered or whatnot in Overwatch. So, what do you guys think of the stealth ability? I mean, is it just not strong? My experience is like, unless you're doing it preemptively and sneaking around or whatnot, it's hard to stay stealth because if you're in a battle, they're just going to randomly shoot and sometimes it hits you and then you come unstealth immediately.
Yeah, so the thing is, like, when you compare it, so people were saying, I guess, before she came out, like, oh my god, stealth in this game, I can't believe Blizzard, they're so crazy, like, this is awful, but right. In reality, when you consider the fact that every hero, there's no limit on ammo in this game, there's no, like, ammo packs, you just reload and keep spamming. So most maps, I would say, have very decisive choke points where spam comes through, so, I mean, the way you look at it is it's more of your initiation. Like using it to escape is pretty unreliable. You're not going to see a lot of players use the transponder to like initiate a fight and then invis out. Like it's generally going to be invis in, transponder out, unless you're like going for some crazy kamikaze ult. But point being that you need it just so you can get in position. It's kind of, I would argue it's probably worse than Tracer Blink in that regard. And in terms of like flanking potential, there's already a lot of heroes that can flank without it. Like you have Winston that can like go behind on some maps like Dorado. Farrah can come over roofs and stuff. So it's just more or less her equivalent to like a Genji dash, in my opinion. She needs it, you know, like she wouldn't be able to do anything without it. So it's definitely not as strong, I think, as people were anticipating or maybe were. It didn't warrant the amount of complaining that happened.
Yeah.
It almost seems like the speed buff is a bigger deal than the actual invisibility.
Getting back to the
so you go pretty fast.
Battle. Yeah, exactly. It is super fast. Is it faster than Lucio without his amp
up? It's faster than 76 when he sprints. So if you're taking fights right now, I think like, I don't know, there's definitely times where teams rush to the point. Like you'll be on offense, there's some crazy scrappy fight on Dorado 2 and you'll maybe switch someone to 76 to try to like clean up fast, like get back as soon as possible.
Right.
You might switch to her then to take a really scrappy engagement. But the fact she blocks the cart and the cap point while invis is also a pretty big deal, I think.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
People will play around with that because if you're trying to stall out Hanamura and then suddenly there's just an invis hero on the point and you don't know where she is, it's pretty good, even if it's only for a couple seconds.
Well, sometimes you can get a tick, you know, like if they're really out of position for whatever reason, and you know, that can be a pretty big deal on something like Hanamura.
Yeah.
Okay, another thing that came out was obviously the 1v1, 3v3, you know, in custom. And, well, actually, they announced that eventually they'll be adding it to custom. Right now, it's just in the arcade, and you can't set anything up, really. You know, it's just 3v3, just in that arcade mode. What do you guys think of that? Like, you guys think the map's good? Does the formats have any potential to maybe be a competitive thing?
I'll be bluntly honest. I actually think King of the Hill maps are better suited for 1v1s. Simply because with the 1v1, like, there's no time limit. There's no reason you ever have to engage. And the fact that it, like, randomly chooses heroes means that you can have these situations where there's actually no reason why you would be the one to engage ever. Yeah. So not like people are going to take this game mode super seriously right now. But if you had, like, a $100,000 1v1 tournament, like, why would you ever put yourself in a risky place? Like, if it's Torb versus Torb, you just camp your turret forever.
Yeah.
So I actually think King of the Hill is like a better game type for it, because you actually have a, like, once you capture the
control
point,
objective to it,
the other person has to get in there to stop it. So that, I don't know, that's how I feel about 1v1. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree with that. I also think that it'd be nice if just the 1v1 format was a completely different thing with all the characters. Maybe they have more hit points. Maybe, you know, it's not, some of those battles are like, they end instantly. It's just crazy. You run into each other, one engagement, it's over, because there's no health packs on the map. There's nothing like that, right? So they literally last 5 to 10 seconds. But, you know, if you had more hit points, there'd be a lot more different, you know, skirmishes. A lot of the headshotting would be, you know, on display or whatnot. And it could be, I don't know, it could be fun that way. Manga, what do you think?
I think you need a health packs. That's pretty much like, you need, like, in the 3v3 format, you need a support or you lose. Like,
yeah.
You can't really run triple DPS. Roadhog is broken.
Roadhog's so,
like,
good.
Like, the self heal and the pick potential is just unbelievable. And, like, in 1v1s, like you said, like, playing, like, doing the whole campy thing is a possibility. But, like, eventually you get wall hacks. I think it's like,
yep.
I don't know how long it is, honestly, but eventually you see minutes, people, maybe, and you just draw, like, and then it resets a different character. I love 1v1 though. That's kind of my thing. Like, in TF2, all I would do is MGE, which is a 1v1 mod. So I'm a little fan of it, but, like, the way that they designed it could be better, just with health packs, in my opinion.
Have you heard of this game called Quake? You should try it sometime.
Exactly, right?
No, MGE was life. Like, before Mangachu, there was me climbing the MGE ladders. And, like, I was like number one or two at some point in, like, NA on that shit. But point being that I think that there's a lot of potential on the 1v1 mod and even the 3v3 mod. I don't like the idea of, like, the one death thing. Like, if they actually just turn that into MGE with, like, random spawns around the map and, like, first to 20 kills or something, it could be super good, I think, or at least, like, more enjoyable for sure.
I kind of like... Well, okay, so there, I agree with the points that you made there, but there's an element to the 3v3 that the way it is right now that I do like, which is, you know, whenever, let's just say you're in a position where two of your teammates die, and then you're, like, the only person there, it's actually kind of cool having them. Like,
I mean 3v3. I meant just the 1v1. 3v3 is whatever. Yeah. I think that 3v3 you could expand on too, though, right? Like, you could add objectives, you could add health packs, I think, arguably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, add, even, I mean, I don't want to, like, go you crazy, but you could have, like, runes and stuff, right? Like, power-ups, you could have, like, a quad damage in there. Like, you could make some pretty crazy game modes with the concept of deathmatch in this game, but
literally make Quake.
Yeah, I mean, you could, right?
Yeah.
I had this idea where, like, it'd be really cool if you spawned as, like, you spawned as just, like, a civilian tracer with no blink, and then you just ran around the map, and if you picked up the health pack, or you picked up, like, packs of or weapons, it would turn you into the hero of the weapon that you picked up.
Oh, that's cool.
That'd be pretty sick.
Actually, that's pretty sick.
Blizzard should call me. We'll make that happen. But
just have
point being that, like, there's a lot of mod potential, and I think that that's what I'm excited.
Oh, man, I like that idea. That's really, really cool. Yeah, things like armor packs. I mean, armor's already on in the game. You know, just throw those around the map too. You know, you literally could have a lot of Quake elements to it. 3v3, I think, has the most potential. Whenever the custom comes out, and hopefully they'll...
The PTR, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, is it? Okay, cool. I think health packs too. If we can add some health packs too, there'll be more different combinations of characters too. I think they'll be cool. Maybe Symmetra with this new change we're about to talk about could be interesting in that format too, with some of her new abilities. Do you guys ever get to ults? It's like, I get to one ult when I play 3v3. That's about it. Like, it's usually the whole hog too whenever I get to it, and that's, like, ridiculous.
I've had some pretty sick standoffs in 1v1 Bastion where it comes down to the
yeah
Even D.Va, sometimes you'll like both lose your suit and then you'll like dodge each other until you get your mechs back. But
yeah, Reinhardt's fun. I have a lot of fun Reinhardting because I main
Reinhardt. I think I've
it's like
won
a fighting game.
One it, seriously. Only one.
What was that, Nanga?
I think I've only won like maybe one. I've played like at least six or seven and I just get destroyed every time.
Oh, really?
I
can't do it. You're missing out on packs, man. You got to get that pack once a week, you know? But anyways, if those of you haven't tried it out, I encourage you to try it out. It's really quick too. The games are really, really fast and it helps you with the whole winning nine times in arcade and getting those three packs that they offer, or those loot boxes, not packs. God, I've been playing Hearthstone too much. So, but yeah, get those loot boxes that are available every week in our arcade. All right. So I guess the next thing to talk about is really the Symmetra update. Jeff came out with a new developers update video today and I really focused on the changes that are coming to Symmetra because they're doing a pretty big rework, not a complete redesign of it. I mean, she still has a lot of the same abilities that she has, but you know, they're buffing up a lot, changing the ult significantly too. So let's talk about that first, the ultimate. This is going to be the first character that you can only choose between two different ultimates, which is really cool because her teleporter was always so, you know, one-dimensional in terms of what it provided and whatnot. So the first one, the teleporter, will still be one of the options, and it'll have more hit points as well as it will have shield added to it. So whenever it does get damaged, you'll, you know, at least the shield damage, it'll regen there. And then the second option will be this shield generator that gives shield to a radius around the shield generator, and apparently it's more than just the her typical shield ability. So I don't know exactly.
Yeah, it's 75.
It's 75, yeah, 75. Yeah. So that's a lot. I'm curious what it's going to look like, A, and then how it's going to, you know, like work, or how big this radius is, because like, is it something you put on the objective, you know, that or the, you know, the control points, or is it something you put off to the side?
No, it's actually ginormous. It's like, I don't even know what to compare it to. I think it's, he gave a number, but I think it's like 3 or 4 times wider than the Mei.
Oh God!
Blizzard. Holy shit!
Like
it's like the entire size of the playing field. It's like instead of having to run around and drop shields, you just have like this shield creator. All right, it's 50 meters. I think Mei ult is like 10 meters or something.
Holy!
So
you have to kill Mercy Res in the beta.
Yeah, it's like original Mercy Res. I mean, all right. So hear me out, because I'll talk about like from a standpoint of balance, right? It's an ult.
Yeah.
The shield thing. So you have to get to it, one. I think the 75 shields might be too crazy. I'm not sure if I'm sold on it, but at the same time, all you have to do is kill it. Like, now, instead of having to do the extra damage and take off the 25 or 50 shields, you just have to get a hero in to, like, kill that turret. So I think, like, from a gameplay standpoint, it sounds really crazy on paper, but when you consider the fact that you can just pulse bomb it down, it's not that scary anymore.
It just means that you actually... You're going to have to deal with it, though.
You have
though.
To find
I mean,
it. It's like a
75 extra HP is incredibly significant.
Oh, for sure.
Given that it's 50-meter radius, I'm just imagining, for instance, first point on Numbani, you could probably stick the shield generator around back kind of near where the retail like area is. And would it even give shields to people who are up on the top right balcony? Like,
yeah,
those people even could have shields.
No, I'm sure it goes AoE in the direction. But
vertically, yeah.
The scary thing for me is there's some maps where you can like kind of glitch around with Mei. Like you can force Symmetra into positions that she shouldn't be able to get to. And like that's where I get a little worried. Like
true.
Think about like if you got it on like Hanamura A and you can put it up on that left side roof when you're attacking, like the one that you really can't get to unless a Mei boosts you, like that gets really wonky because like then only like 2 or 3 heroes can get up there in the game at all, and they're probably gonna have to balance around that and or change the maps. Yeah, but then you're running Pharah into like what if they have like a McCree or 76? Yeah, you have like there's a lot of weird things I think that you can abuse with it, but
yeah,
for the most part it's interesting.
No.
Can you toggle between after like
no.
Toggle between the two? It's just you pick one.
Well, once you pick one, it's it. Like, and once you place it, probably I think that's it.
Yeah.
But it's cool, you know, because it functions similarly. Like whenever a teleporter is down, you got to find that thing too, because it affects the matchup in a huge way too. So I like the fact that they kind of had very different functions, but yet the same type of same type of urgency to kill this one object, you know, that they lay down. I wonder if the shield generator has as much hit points in shield hip. Is it the same thing essentially? It just gives shield
400 HP, I think, on the
400. That's pretty significant.
On the teleporter, on the teleporter, I think.
Oh yeah, the teleporter.
Still a good amount.
Oh, you mean the shield? Yeah. I don't know. I haven't.
Yeah.
You mean like the actual projected barrier?
No, just the shield generator itself, like the object that's creating the shield.
Yeah, I think it's 400 HP.
Okay, so, wow, that's a lot.
That's why I said the pulse bomb is like you just go in with the pulse bomb and that's your play.
I mean, you have to use an ult to kill it. Like,
you have to use an ult to kill an ult, Mangachu. I mean, an ult that builds faster and easier.
That's true.
It's worth it.
I mean, it's definitely worth it. You can get your ult so fast, especially in maps like King's Row.
I'm just arguing, but you could also just go, what's her name now, Sombra, and just hit Q, and what's that thing going to do?
Oh, that's a good point, too.
There's a lot of counterplay, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's another reason to play Sombra. That's true.
It's like they added Sombra to the game, and then they were like, "What do we do with this hero?" So then they added it. They like changed the metric to just be this hero that gets completely countered by Sombra. It's a pretty good meta game they just played there, but it's good.
Well, I mean, if you're gonna hack the thing, you might as well just kill the thing, right? If you're already there.
Oh yeah, I just mean like you EMP all the shields off all the people that have the aura. Or whatever.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
And I'm sure that it stops the teleporter, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, because
you can hack what's it called, you can hack Torbjorn turret, so I would assume you can hack this thing.
So also with Symmetra is a new photon barrier ability. So they've replaced, you know, her normal shielding ability, because they thought it was as Jeff put it, similar to balancing spinning dishes, I think is what he said, which is like, okay, that's an interesting analogy. But yeah, so this photon barrier is going to be, I think he described it as an elliptical, you know, like shield that you shoot, like, or you push or send off, I guess, is how it goes. And it just, you know, it functions similar to like a Reinhardt shield, that sort of thing. That sounds pretty cool. That's pretty different. And I don't know, she's not going to be a tank, obviously, but maybe with her, with, I don't know, D.Va and, I don't know, and Reinhardt or whatnot, you have like crazy amounts of blocking. What do you guys think?
I think this is a super cool sounding ability. Obviously, this patch came out like 2 hours ago, so yeah. I only had a chance to tune into some streams here and there. But if you think about how many Overwatch maps are focused around a single choke point with maybe one or two other flanking angles, but like for the most part, people are going through a single choke point. Like this alone is making Symmetra interesting on attack. I think this alone could make her at least somewhat viable on attack now. I really can't wait to see how this plays out, because it's 1,000 HP. I mean, yeah, this is half of a Reinhardt shield. This is twice as much HP as a Winston barrier. And yeah, it's very temporary. It doesn't last very long. It moves pretty slowly, but it moves quick enough that like you're not going to be able to play with it for too long. But I think just having 1 or 2 seconds of 1,000 HP extra barrier is massive. I don't know. Yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting ability.
It'll be great on Ike involved. You know, that first gate, I mean, just send that thing through, and then, you know, your team can just charge through instead of having to have a flanker or whatnot.
It's a bad week or month to be a DPS character, I think. It's like kind of how I feel right now with this. Like, you add, people are already upset, I think, a little bit about the D.Va extra health and then the Roadhog being Roadhog.
I know what you mean.
So then you're at like this point now where you could arguably go Dorado and just wall off the right side choke on defense with like a Mei, and then wall off the left side with a D.Va Reinhardt and turn to like this crazy tanky turtle comp. And then suddenly there's like, if you like really want to picture it, you get the Symmetra ult up, and then
yeah, 75 extra HP.
There's a 675 HP D.Va with regenerable shields coming at you.
It's
and
time to
all
run
this
bash.
Stuff.
Wait, Flame. throw in a Torbjorn into that.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, Torbjorn, you're adding to the cheese. You only have so many heroes, but then you have an Ana healing a 1,150 HP Winston during Primal Rage.
Oh my God.
There's so much crazy stuff you could do now, but I think we're gonna need a hero with like a railgun pretty soon that just ignores all these barriers.
that would be like the best ult in the game, is just like a railgun that pierces barriers. That'd be sick.
That's basically Widowmaker with like piercing.
If it was like a 75 damage finisher, I think it'd be a pretty good primary weapon.
Okay.
And also, even yet more, her primary fire has slightly longer range. Symmetra was already like the best counter ever to like a Winston diving your backline. Symmetra could just destroy him. But I feel like Winston's Genjis trying to dive on a Symmetra are going to have a really bad time. It almost seems like it could potentially even work against like a D.Va or something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I think Genjis are going to cry. Like,
I'm worried. Like, I'm already playing less and less Genji as time goes on. I think this.
Imagine a Sombra and a Symmetra on defense, and you just remove all the health packs from the team and give a Sombra like 275 HP. So, like, if the Genji comes in at all, he just gets hacked or mowed down by this microwave. There's like, there's so much weird things you could definitely do in pubs right now. Like, I'm pretty excited. The Void Rays.
Yeah, and then on top of that, she gets 6 centuries to begin with now instead of the 3, and then, you know, having to wait. And then her cooldown is actually down to 10 seconds now instead of 12.
So, if you think about it, they just buffed Symmetra in like 4 different ways.
Dude, they just
in a single
made
patch.
Her super crazy cool. Yeah, so this is their way of just making her viable, forcing her to be viable in some way. We'll be definitely in the lower levels, people will be playing her a lot, I think. But we'll see what happens at the top. 6 centuries, you can make a death room like immediately. I mean, you can defend that whatever room you're going to put that shield generator in. 6 of freaking turrets in that room. It's pretty tough, except, you know, unless you get like a Winston in there or something.
She needed that, I think. I mean, I don't know about the rest of the buffs, but she definitely needed the turret thing. I hated that if you like wanted to run Symmetra last second, you just couldn't. Like, oh, the clock's at 15 seconds counting down. Like, I can't actually get to the point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I wasted 5 seconds running to the point. That sucks. Yeah, I know what you mean. But anyways, it's exciting. You know, Symmetra definitely was one of the characters that needed a lot more. And we've been talking about it since, probably late beta or maybe even mid beta. So finally getting around to it, that's definitely great to see. And they also mentioned, or Jeff also mentioned, that Oasis isn't in the PTR yet, but will be coming soon. They're still trying to, I think, work out some things, especially the jump pads and whatnot. So excited to see that map too, whenever it finally comes out. Okay, so let's move on, let's talk about season 2, just competitive for you guys. How is it going for you, Mangachu, specifically? How's the quest for number 1 for season 2?
I have it. It's
you
pretty
have
good.
It. Yes. Nice. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I abuse dynamic queue and I duo with Miso and Zoms most of the time. And I'm sitting at 4,697.
Wow.
Almost 4,700.
Nice.
Next person is just like barely at 4,600. I think it's Cody. He used to play like only Widowmaker. And like the moment Soldier got buffed, he did nothing but play Soldier. And he went from like rank 400 to number 2 in like 3 days. It's hilarious. He's a god at Soldier.
Yeah,
I'm hoping to end this season rank 1. But I'm not going in super confident because Sinatra has come back. Like, Sinatra used to be like 30 points behind me, and then he lost 3 games, and now I have like a 200 point lead. But he's come back before, so.
So you mentioned abusing the dynamic matchmaking. What is that exactly?
Like, everybody just assumes anybody who duo queues or like queues with friends, they're just abusing the whole fact that like you queue into solo queue people. So,
all right, you want to hear the real side of the story, Shannon?
Okay, let's hear
while
it.
While this fluffer gives you the workaround. All right, so here's my experience, right?
This is the guide, guys, to laddering.
So, like, I only solo queue on stream because I'm a masochist. My viewers like watching me tilt. And because personally, for me, I find myself that I get a better understanding of the game when I don't have to rely on, like, teammates or whatever, like, someone to, like, obviously combo with. If you solo queue, right, here's the thing. It'll be like, I don't know, 9 o'clock at night, and you'll solo queue, your games will be going fine. You'll like climb from 38, 39, 4K, you'll get to 41, get really close to 42, and then the clock hits like 11 p.m. Eastern. And suddenly, the game is like, what do I do with this guy? Nobody's playing. Or like, there's not enough top 500 players to play. So what does it do? It gives you like the most unwinnable games. But you can get around that by putting 2 or 3 people in your party, because then even if you do get like 4 diamond players on your team, you at least still have 3 top 500 players.
Okay.
So the odds of you losing goes substantially down the more players that you have with you. So while it's cool and all, that's kind of where I'm going though with this, is that it's really hard to solo queue climb at all because the game won't actually let you get games with people in your skill level past a certain point. So I think that that's one of the
so
my biggest
PM
gripes.
Is when it, like,
it's like 10 or 11. Sometimes it's really early. If you hit Q and it says it doesn't know the time, you know how it gives you a prediction?
Yeah.
If it says like unknown, then you just have to stop. Like that's when you hit the button to cancel and you go play 1v1s or you load up Heroes of the Storm and get your Genji skin. You find something else to do. That's my take on it.
I hear I'm you, just... man. Okay. That's good advice. Definitely. So 11 p.m., guys. Once it strikes it, set your timers. Then
for top 500 players, for sure.
Yeah, top 500.
It's not worth it.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fish Sticks, how about you, man? How's the season 2 going?
It's been going pretty well. Was able to climb quite a bit over the weekend. Not at the same level as these guys, but I made it to mid masters.
Yeah, that's great.
That's good.
I peaked at 37.06 or something like that over the weekend.
Nice.
So yeah, hoping to get a couple more games in before the end of the season. Which Blizzard, please, it's a national holiday. We have a 4-day weekend, and the season ends the day before the 4-day weekend. You're basically making it so I'm not going to play Overwatch during like when I have the most free time ever. So thanks a lot, Blizzard. But dude, I noticed something weird about Masters. Like once you start to get into like low mid Masters, the trolling like escalates. I've seen more Bastions and like Torbs and random bullshit and Symmetra's on attack. Like in low to mid Masters than Diamond. I don't know. It's pretty
it's
weird.
The tilt, man. It like you get enough games like that. Mm-hmm. All right, so you start off your night. I'll give you guys the solo queue experience for people who aren't familiar with solo queue. You start off your night, you're in like a really good mood, you get home from work, you maybe took a nap, and then suddenly you play like 2 or 3 games, you're like, all right, this is good, this is going good, this is like fine, I'm winning, I'm on a win streak, and like you'll get like a 6-game win streak, right? And you'll get up to like, I don't know, 4,000, 4,100, maybe even lower, depending on where you started, right? You'll be on like a 7-game win streak. You're getting 30 SR per game. Everything is going great. And then the next game, you get this dude on your team who's been through the ringer, and he doesn't want to get off Symmetra, and he's going to play it on both sides. And he'll disable team chat, and he'll just feed. And then he'll say, I have gold damage, even when he doesn't. And suddenly your mental state is just, it's just destroyed.
Yep.
And there's nothing you can do. And then you take that mentality where you just lost your 7-game win streak to the Symmetra player into the next game, and suddenly you don't even care anymore because your win streak's done.
It's a chain.
And you break someone else's win streak because you don't even want to play Reinhardt, but you need to play Reinhardt. I don't know. It's like it's a chain reaction that goes throughout the ladder, throughout the night. Yeah. The win streaks, cycle, I think, are hurting more than helping. I could do a video on that if people want, but I don't.
I've heard of I definitely heard of more people, at least lately, doing that. And I think it might have to do somewhat with, you know, people trying, and like you said, they get broken or whatnot, and they've already reached their highs, and maybe they just can't reach their highs anymore, or maybe it's just not realistic for them, so they just literally quick play competitive. I don't know why they do it when they can just play quick play, but that can be pretty rough for sure. So season 2 ends tomorrow, is that right?
Yeah, tomorrow.
So, season 3 is coming up real soon. And what are the big changes coming up in season 3? Just so we can...
Quick play with... I mean, it's in right now, but the quick play with one hero limit is a very big deal for the duration of the season, I think. Like, right now, I don't know. I mean, Mangachu is obviously trying to fight for his number one spot, but I think if he was in, like, I think I'm, like, number 100 or something. Like, when you're down there, there's not really much of an incentive right now to play, because all you can really do is lose your top 500. Yeah. So I think like all of the big changes that came with the Sombra patch will like you maybe you didn't feel them super big right now, but I think next season is when you'll feel it too.
So you guys have enough to buy another golden weapon after this for sure, right? All of you guys will probably get
not yet.
Not mid? Okay.
No, you get one right
next week. How can you not get one?
We'll get one after the season.
Yeah, after the season.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Like
yeah,
I can't earn one right now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I'll have one after the season.
Yeah, as soon as you break 4K, you get a free weapon.
All right, so which ones are you getting next? Which weapon are you getting next?
Probably May.
May? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
I've been grinding on May this season. Like, people are thinking I can only play, like, Pharah Roadhog or Pharah May, and that's all I've ever played. Like, this season, May just became really good. I just picked her up, and I've been loving her. So.
Okay. Yeah, okay, May. All right, how about you, Flame?
I mean, I already have Golden May, so I'm probably going to go with Golden Symmetra for next season.
Golden Symmetra would be sick, dude. If her beam changed color, too, that would be so awesome.
Fish Golden sticks. Turrets? Can we get Golden Turrets?
Oh, great.
That'd be great.
That would be sweet.
I don't know. Maybe maybe Winston or something. I'm a big fan of Winston.
Winston, wow. Okay. Okay. I think if I were to get one, I think I'd probably get the D.Va one, actually.
D.Va, Winston, one of the two.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we move on, I just want to ask our experts here. Are D.Va and Soldier too good right now? Or, like, they're not, like, must picks, but they're, like, you probably should have one on most maps in most situations. At least that's my perspective. At least Soldier.
We can talk
about it. Well, the thing is, right? Yeah, we can talk. I mean, you want to talk about it right now?
Sure. I mean,
if you want to wait for Envious, I mean, whatever.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
The thing is, 76 is really good right now. Like, there's no doubting it. If you're not running D.Va, how are you dealing with 76? That's kind of where I think it is right now in terms of how it's playing out. It's like you want to run 76 because he's just amazing. And then the only way that you really can deal with the aimbot and with the nano boosted tech visor and with him in general is with the right click from D.Va with the Matrix. So I think D.Va might be too tanky right now. But she's only too tanky if you run the 76. I think teams are still afraid a little bit to get off the 76, or like even, I mean, McCree gets shredded by her even harder. But I'm almost at the point where I think you might start seeing 76 not get picked, and like teams will switch the 76 out for like a Mei or a Zarya just to kill the D.Va. But
okay,
I think Zarya might be more, or D.Va might be more overpowered right now than the 76. Just because of the fact that she arguably counters the 76.
That ult too, man. It's been pretty good lately. Nanga, what do you think, man?
I think D.Va, she's like really good right now. I forget how it worked the last time she was like broken when her it used to be her shift, I think, or her E was the defense matrix, and then turned to the right click and had like a 0.5 second cooldown. And it was just unbelievably broken at the time.
Because you could like catch rockets with it. You could like drop it in between while Pharah was using rockets.
It was unbelievable back then. And like she was really good for a somewhat short period of time. And then everybody just remembered how easy it is to counter her. You know, you just go like, you go Zen and then you hook her and then she's dead. But that's not really a thing anymore. Like she doesn't get destroyed because of that 100 HP. So it's not that hard of a counter. But I feel like people are just going to start running counters just to mess with her, and then she's just useless. Soldier, I feel like they did, like, when they nerfed McCree's right click, they were saying, oh, he's a tank buster. You know, that shouldn't be a thing. Soldier 76 is a tank buster right now.
Yeah.
He destroys.
But you know what's crazy, like, actually, that you mentioned that, is that I feel like I wouldn't mind if they buffed him back to the point where he could two-shot the Winston like he could before, because of how good Ana is. Like, I feel like the damage to heal ratio right now is like in a really weird spot where I almost wish that McCree could bust down tanks even harder than he does.
I mean, his right click is just bad right now, honestly, other than flashbang. Like, if it's like a 200 HP character, like, there's no point of right clicking a tank.
No, yeah, of course.
As far as I'm concerned. So, like, honestly, then buffing it wouldn't be a bad idea. I've never really been a fan of that because I just feel like it's kind of like a brain dead combo against like low HP characters, and that's all I play for the most part. So it always tilted me. But like, if they're going to buff Soldier like this, you know, they shouldn't have nerfed McCree like that.
I mean, the thing about Soldier is they bumped his damage per bullet by about 15% from 17 to 20. Seems like
21.
Is it 21? Yeah. I thought it was 20.
It's three. It's plus three, whatever it is.
Three? Oh, okay.
I thought it was plus four. Three. So at this point, like, I literally think lowering that by one damage per bullet might be enough to just bring him like more into. Literally. That's crazy. I mean, they buffed by 15%. If they only buffed it by like 10 or 11% or whatever that is, I think that would be enough. It's literally like on the edge because I don't think he's crazy OP. It's not like he dominates everyone, but he's just so good that you usually want him on your team in almost every situation. So I think literally taking it down like one or two damage per bullet is all it really needs.
But what's crazy is that, I mean, if you go in that direction, I think you kind of open yourself up more to the tank problem. I mean, I call it a problem. It's whatever you want to call it. But the fact that, like, there's not many things in the game right now that can kill something that Anna's shooting.
Yeah, I'll lead back to Anna. She's
and, like,
true. She is strong.
So you have to, like, I agree that I think 76's damage is probably too high, and, like, you probably want to put him more in line with McCree in terms of, like, DPS. Like, as a Tracer spammer, I can't even, you can't play Tracer against 76 right now. It's actually, like, so obnoxious. You get headshot, like, twice or something, and you're down to half HP, and then maybe you eat, like, a random bullet from someone else, you're just dead. Even the rocket, like rocket in two clicks, I think you're a dead Tracer.
Yeah.
So I agree his damage is too high, but it's still not enough to kill these Reinhardt Roadhog comps.
Yeah, yeah, but that's so that's more of an issue with Anna though.
I agree. Yeah, no, for sure. I just mean like
keep
oh,
upping
oh,
the,
oh yeah,
the
yeah no, I want Anna. Great. I want Anna nerfed some way, but that was kind of my point. It's like don't touch his damage without touching that too. You know, like you start lowering his damage, and then suddenly we're back to Winston Roadhog Zarya comps every game. And
I mean, we still are kind of like that. Like the whole counter to triple tank was the fact that you get ultra-ly fast.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then they just they decreased it. Or they increased it. Like, I'll take forever to charge now, which I mean, like, I'm a fan of because
I love it.
I mean, the skill ceiling, I guess, of the game. You can't just rely on Anna Reaper or Zarya Hanzo or whatever because they're a lot more rare. But they buff triple tank by doing that, and they didn't nerf Anna.
I think
the extent that people like that it needs to be like they nerfed her. All of her ult's always been good, but like the rest of her kit is also undeniably broken. Other than like maybe sleep, but sleep's still really good.
Yeah, I think her heal. I mean, I had ideas. Like, I don't want to turn this into a like suggestion discussion, but I was thinking like if you could turn it like TF2 with like crit heals, where if you're taking damage, you heal less than if you haven't taken damage for X amount of seconds. That might be good. Like, just as a general rule across the game.
That'd be okay.
And then maybe, like, nerf the HP of some of the tanks. Like, does D.Va need 600? Does Roadhog need whatever? What's Roadhog? 600?
600.
Yeah, like, do they need 600 health? Like, I don't think so, but...
Well, D.Va definitely needed something.
I think Roadhog kind of needs, like, a good amount of health just because of the lock of protection that he has and his self-heal every 8 seconds for half his health. You know, that's balanced.
Well, you're giving up shield, too.
Unless Anna nukes you, then it's your entire HP pool.
Yeah.
That's right.
It all leads back to Anna, man.
No, I agree with that.
All right, well, why don't we... we're going to talk some more meta in a second once we get to the events, but why don't we move on for now just to some events and player news that are coming up, at least. So DreamHack, that's going to be coming up in this week, actually. So they announced the talent, and this was probably like a week and a half ago. So again, we haven't had a show in a couple of weeks. So the DreamHack talent was announced, and the biggest thing here to notice is really that Hex's first big LAN that he's getting invited to. So that's pretty cool since Hex, you know, for those of you who've been watching since beta, has been, you know, one of the main Gosu Gamers casters for a long time, and he's done some other community events too. So cool that he's getting a chance, you know, at one of these big events. Others, Zoe's going to be hosting, Mr. X is going to be casting, of course, ZP and Jason and Uber Shouts, or Mitch, as we like to call him. I'm not sure what to call him anymore. It's like, is he Uber
he hates
or
Uber.
Is he
it's
Mitch?
Weird.
Yeah.
He's like trying to rebrand himself, but I don't think he knows how to do it yet. He hasn't found the right balance. No, I know for a fact he is, because I talked to him in depth about it at BlizzCon, about like how he doesn't like the name, but he can't switch because he doesn't like the word Shouts, but he can't change his name to Uber because of like copyright.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
because then people are going to call him for cabs. Like,
call him for cabs. That's true. That's pretty funny. But anyways, yeah. So I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, it's pretty cool that Hex is getting a shot, right?
I mean, he definitely deserves it. Mm-hmm. You put in you pay your dues and you should get rewarded for that. I mean, we've seen it so many times, Chris, in esports, the people who really put in the work week in and week out and cast every online cup on weekdays and weekends and sacrifice their time consistently over months and months and months, usually ends up paying off. So good to see that happening here. And I know a lot of people on Reddit are going to be happy about this. They've been asking, where's Hex? Where's Hex? Where's Hex? So good for him, man.
Yeah, definitely. And DreamHack's always been great about that too. Like DreamHack, I think, is really good about recognizing the community and, you know, again, like you said, who puts in the work and, you know, sometimes taking a chance on those guys, giving them, you know, an opportunity to kind of experience this whole thing. So great for Hex, and hopefully he does a great job too. There's so many casters though. We got lots of casters, right?
I saw him at BlizzCon. I was thinking to myself, like, it was pretty funny. I mean, I don't want to tell the whole story, but I kept running into ZP at the Blizzard party, whatever it was. It was like the mixer on Thursday,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
And every time I ran to ZP, I guess he had had like a few shots or whatever drinks. And every time I see him, have you guys seen Hex? Have you seen Hex? Are you like, Hex is here. Have you met Hex yet? Have I introduced you to Hex? Like, okay. He was so genuinely excited. And like, I'm really happy for Hex and him to be able to like do an event live. It's like really good. Or it's just good for the scene. And I like really appreciated the genuine excitement from ZP.
Yeah. ZP, good guy, man. Totally good guy. Okay, next up we've got so MLG, the teams have been announced for the Invitational. That's going to the NA Invitational that's going to be happening in December. So, I guess there's no surprises really here, right, with the teams. We got FaZe, Cloud9, Energy, Rise Nation, Fnatic, Team Envious, Team Liquid, and Complexity.
Team Envious, which now has no North American players left on the team.
I know.
Okay, you guys actually want to have this argument? Right? Are you in that argument? Like, do you have a side in that argument?
Side?
You know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, I don't want to bring it up.
Whether it's NA or not. Right.
No, not just like, because there were other teams that felt that, I mean, there was a whole discussion about Rogue, because they're like an NA org. And I don't know if you guys missed it, but
they missed it.
Yeah. So like when they announced the teams, Rogue was pretty upset. I mean, I guess it makes sense from my perspective that they're upset because they're org based in Las Vegas. So like to be not invited to MLG Vegas kind of probably felt bad for them just from like a home thing. But then there was a lot of discussion on Reddit about Envious not having any players, but like they've been living here for so long. Like,
yeah.
It's like I consider them American team now just because of the fact they've been living in those condos in, was it North Carolina for so long? But,
yeah, they're physically in North America. Like, it's fine. Exactly. They're a North American team. I'm for it.
Exactly.
It's still funny to poke fun at that.
They upgraded, right? They got rid of the American. They brought in.
Dude, take Rogue from EU, man. I mean, what do we have? Like Nip and like who else we got over there?
And what's crazy is they're all moving here. I think Rogue's gonna move in by the time. I mean, probably soon, right? Because Apex just ended.
Yeah, probably. So, anyways, yeah, Vegas. You guys gonna be there? Vegas is always fun. Especially in December. So
I haven't booked my flights yet, but I definitely absolutely would like to be there. For obvious reasons. It's Vegas and it's pretty damn good lineup of teams. It's interesting that they decided to go with the NA Invitational. I mean, I guess it could be good for viewership because a lot of these teams are fan favorites, especially like Cloud9, NRG, Fnatic, Envious, like these teams, when they play, they bring an audience. So I can understand from that perspective. And also, there was actually a really good post by, I think it was X-Retzy from Rise Nation, kind of did this whole write-up on
Fez.
Kind of power.
Fez.
Power.
Fez. Yeah,
oh,
okay.
PR
thing.
All right, sorry, mixing up. He wrote a little bit of like power rankings for the teams, and it's very true. I mean, it's not set in stone. North America, these teams kind of, you know, things move around a lot. It's also another chance to see Envious with their new roster, which is maybe going to have Mickey on it.
I haven't heard either way.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
I talked to Taimu actually about that, and I think that they want to bring him back. It's just a matter, like, it's a lot for him, right? This is, I mean, it's a big opportunity, obviously. If the team does well, like, I want to say that they're favorites to win Apex right now, but they're definitely, like, beating Rogue carries a lot of weight for them moving forward.
I don't think they're
so they might be.
Yeah.
Well,
no, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they're favorites, but if they win, if they can get out of this next match against Kangdu Yunxia,
which is
they'll probably be favorites to win because that side of the bracket was the stack side. So next week will probably be the deciding factor, right? I don't know. It's a matter of whether or not I guess he wants to move to NA because he's just ditching Thailand, moving to Korea, then moving to North America. Like, that's a big deal. But he looks like a happy dude, man. Like,
he does, man.
I have never seen someone smile bigger during in general. That, like, I watched that VOD. They kept panning the camera to him, and like he just looks like he's having a blast, and I really respect that.
No, he does. But I think he was quoted as saying that, you know, he's heading back to Thailand after this. No plans to join the team, but if they pay him enough, he'll join the team, basically.
Yeah. Just won, what, Organ of the Year or something?
Yeah. Yeah. So Envious,
they're feeling good right now. Like, you know, like
come on, Has.
Sponsors go through that weird thing. Like, some weeks they'll feel rich, some weeks they'll feel poor. This is definitely a rich week for Envious.
Yeah.
So That's
cool. Can I just say, if it wasn't for the World Cup, there's no way that people would know about Mickey. Like, that is one of the best things to come out of this World Cup, I think. Yeah, it's so awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about, we keep skipping forward, but we'll talk about Mickey.
There's a lot of intertwine here.
No, but it's definitely a great thing for Mickey. And the Thailand team was one of the most underrated teams, or the sleeper pick for a lot of folks, and we were first looking at groups and hearing about scrims.
They were seeded like fourth, right? In their pool?
In their pool? I think they were seated.
Not in the whole thing. Out of the group, they were definitely like the last in the list when we went over it.
They were the last in the list, but based on scrims that everybody was having, right? Everybody was saying that the Thailand team was
rolling everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like destroying everybody. So I'm sure Mickey was a huge part of that. Actually, there was some kind of meter they were talking about where. Some kind of kill meter or kill rating, and his was like the highest, right? And that's kind of what got a lot of people's attention.
Yeah, Hulk. I talked to Hulk, and or maybe it was Taimu, and I was like, "Where did they find this guy?" And Hulk was like, "We just saw his name pop up in the kill feed over and over at World Cup."
Kill feed. Oh, I thought it was like a separate thing.
They had stats. So maybe they had numbers. Yeah, it was stats. So maybe they actually knew, but. Yeah. They said that, I guess that maybe they had scrimmed, but they definitely just picked him out straight from maybe the World Cup week. They probably just had a good time. There was a picture of him and Harry Hook like feeding each other at a restaurant
on Twitter today. Yeah, like, you guys saw that.
They just look like they're having a blast, man. I hope they bring him back.
Anyways, moving on. Tailspin leaves Envious. That was obviously a little bit of drama this past week, and having him leave mid Apex too, like right before their just big quarterfinals match. That was very surprising to a lot of people, and obviously there was some drama as to why he left and whatnot, but sounds like there was definitely some disagreements on maybe some personality clashes as well as disagreements on how to maybe prepare for matches or whatnot. And Tailspin thought it was best for him just to leave and maybe take a little bit of a break and then maybe join another team, because he's definitely going to stay in Overwatch. It's just definitely didn't want to stay with Envious. What do you guys think?
It is strange to drop out in the quarterfinals of a huge tournament,
like probably the biggest tournament right now, easily.
That was a really, really strange move, and I've known Ronnie Tailspin for many, many years. He's a very mature guy from everything I've seen, so this is a bit of a surprise to me. I mean, we're going to get to talking about this. All of these topics are just intertwined, but it just like, it's really interesting. It's like one of the first times we've seen like a player drop a team and then multiple people in that team switch their roles.
Yeah.
After that, it's not like they just replaced him. They added Mickey, who's like playing tank. And then that switched Harry Hook to DPS and Hulk. Internet Hulk to Lucio main. Mm-hmm. I was really surprised to see that from Tailspin. But obviously, like, Envious is finding a new groove that they fit into very well. I don't know. I don't know what else to say on that. It's weird. I wonder where Tailspin's going to go. I mean, there's a lot of teams that I think could benefit from his DPS accolades. So that's also an interesting storyline. Where will Tailspin end up now?
Still number one fair in my mind. I mean, easily. And not to mention, like, all the other DPS characters he's definitely very adept with. So it would be hard to imagine Tailspin not landing with one of the marquee teams, but right now there's not many openings, right? Like, who are the most likely teams that you could think of?
Nobody right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, Happy Cole is just confirmed as a current trial, like that he's the best that he's played with Fnatic.
Who? So, no.
Happy Cool.
Oh, Happy Cool. Okay.
He's playing with DreamHack and MSI, so. Like, if things don't work out with Happy Cool, I could see them maybe talking to Tailspin, because Cool Matt and Tailspin were by far like my favorite DPS combo in closed beta back when everybody was on Envious. Mm-hmm. Cool Matt's playing Flex now, obviously, but like to see those two playing on its team again would be great.
That would be cool. It'd be like old school, basically. That'd be nice. We were definitely hearing some. Rumors of a lot of big teams shaking up, especially after the World Cup and maybe even after Apex here. And so we're starting to see, maybe we're halfway through it. I don't know. We've definitely seen some big moves like recently with players, but this one, I wasn't quite expecting at least so soon. That was kind of crazy. Next up, Cooler replaces Crew on Misfits. So So this is a pretty big change too. Crew was, I thought, a big part of Misfits' success and whatnot. What do you guys think?
There's too many egos right now, I think.
You think?
I mean, I'm just gonna be blunt. Like, there's too many egos. Like, that whole post from Cooler was, in my eyes, or not from Cooler, from Crew, like the way that they mentioned, or like the way that they talked about it, like you could tell that there was like some massive personality ego centric issues, and like it's hurting the scene. I think, like, I was overcritical on Twitter about like Tailspin leaving mid quarterfinals because I thought like it looked bad from an Overwatch outsider perspective, like just from a spectator and like an investor and like an org point of view. It's like the same thing here. I'm down with them doing it mid, like in the off season for them, kind of like Misfits doesn't have, I don't think there's many tournaments coming up from Europe that I know of other than DreamHack, but I don't know if they're even in DreamHack.
I think they are.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
So they are in DreamHack, and yeah, I guess it's kind of a big deal for them, but they have time, right? That's not for a little while.
No, they have time.
DreamHack's this week,
man.
Oh, is this? Sorry, so I'm completely off my timeline. I thought DreamHack was after MLG.
No.
When's MSI?
Okay, you're right.
MSI's in between DreamHack.
Yeah, it's anyway. In a couple weeks, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I got those two confused.
Okay. Point being, the timing's weird. The leaving statement was weird. And, like, he's so good. Like, you have to bring yourself down, too, because if you think about, like, you just left BlizzCon and, like, they just hyped this league. All you have to do is, like, put on your happy face and play, you know? Like, I feel like breaking ties with some people right now is, like, the worst timing. So, to me, it's bizarre because I always really admired Crew's Zarya play. Like, he's known for his Zarya. And, like, he comes off Zarya, and I think he plays Reaper, too. And he's, like, he just pounds. Like, that team won E-League. And then what are you doing? Like, I don't know. That's where I think, I mean, we can transition this, but that's where I think like the league is the best thing right now, because I feel like these teams need more structure and like discipline to like get through shit like this without creating these really artificial or unnecessary internal issues.
Well, that's the thing with the league is, you know, this type of league that they're talking about, it'll force you to, you know, it's going to be like, some guy that's, you know, playing for, you know, basketball or football or whatnot, you know, NBA, NFL or whatnot, he doesn't want to go to that team. Well, it's too bad. You have to go to that team unless you're going to sit out for an entire year and then, you know, like basically be a free agent after that. That's happened like a couple times, I think, ever. And I think one of the most biggest ones was like Kobe didn't want to go to, you know, Minnesota or whatnot, and then basically forced his way into the Lakers. But that doesn't happen. You know, so these players, they'll be forced to play with each other, and it'll be interesting. And it's kind of, I kind of want to ask you, Manga, like how you feel about it, like as a player too. It's just like, if you're going to be in an environment where, you know, traditionally esports has always been the teams kind of build themselves and then eventually, you know, get sponsored, you know, these organizations, you know, support them and foster them. And, you know, maybe once they get in a coach, then there's a different element to it. But for the most part, they have been more of their own entity and having more of a sponsorship, monetary, you know, support. When we're talking about the professional league, it's different. It's going to be the teams, you know, being the organizations, and they're, you know, essentially picking the players and building the teams. And those players, they have to play together. No matter if you like it or not, you got to play with, you know, player X over here. How do you feel about that, Mega?
I like it to an extent. Like, I feel like it's kind of a big thing, especially with NA Overwatch. I guess Overwatch in general, with Misfits having all that drama.
Misfits isn't the end, by the way. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's going to be more roster swaps for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, like, a bunch of those can be happening in the future. Like, they're getting ready for the league, if they can even get the team in the league. I don't know how that works out, to be 100% honest. But, like, people just need to learn to deal with the bullshit that comes with other people. Like, people may tilt. People may goof around or whatever, and you may not like that, but if they're playing very well when it matters in matches, you know, that's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, I want to come off on this, or I want to talk about this, because I talked to Nate at BlizzCon about this too, and he brought up football or something. He's like, most of these kids have never played team sports, they don't know what discipline is like, and like, I kind of get what he meant. Like, at the time, you kind of think, when I thought about it, I was like, oh, like, you don't really want to draw comparisons to, like, team sports. But I played soccer, I played football through high school. Like, there's, like, this weird, I don't want to say weird, but currently with teams in esports, it's very, like, player politics. Like, I'm sure Mangachu has had his fair share of roster drama, and like I've had my fair share of roster drama over the years between multiple games, where like one person's your leader and that person makes all the decisions, but they're also your player on your team. So even if so, like when you get into team arguments, or like your teammates like disagree on something, that one player has a bigger value in his say, even if maybe they're wrong. And like we just saw that actually in Dota with like Team Secrets drama. It was arguably the same thing, where like one player has too much power. But in sports, traditionally, that doesn't happen. Like all the players are treated equal. They all like work together. They all go to practice together. They are all punished together. Like if one player messes up on the football team, the whole team like runs for it, or like has to do push-ups or whatever for it, or the extra day in the leg room. You know, like you have like a very more team-centric mentality when you play team sports. And I think that that's definitely lacking currently in esports, where there's no real final say. There's no like role model in front of you. Like I've had offers to coach, and I think to myself, like, how could I coach a team that already exists? Like I'd almost rather coach a team that I created that like knew that I would just be like that model, you know, like,
well, you just have to say
like role model, just like that person who has like the say, and the players are just there to play, and any bullshit that goes on is someone else's problem, because like there's an analyst to like tell you what the strategy should be, or a coach to tell you like just get over it, go hit the weight room. I don't know, you know, like not that same thing, but that kind of voice of reason that doesn't exist right now. And I think that that's what's really hindering the growth in some ways.
I mean, you've definitely had professional teams like in the past, multiple professional teams that have won championships together, like in traditional sports, that haven't liked each other. You know, like I'll throw an NBA one. Shaq and Kobe hated each other, totally hated each other, and they won, you know, two championships together, hating each other. So that's the thing about, you know, this type of league is it's, I don't know, it's so much about I think it's more about professionalism. You know, it's like making these guys more professional, you know, and you know, you have to understand this is your job, and you don't have to necessarily like the net guy next to you. And like Mangachu said, if he's playing well, then you know, kind of suck it up. And especially this moment, like I don't know how the teams are going to be formed initially, but if I were just to make a guess, I would guess that some of the teams will be formed based on the current, you know, the current formed teams. So if you are an organized team right now, you probably have a better shot than just that single dude that's just, you know, floating right now. So I think it is much smarter to like try to remain with an organization than going into this phase.
There is a combine, though.
There will be a combine, but still, you know, you have to think.
That might help to an extent, but
The combine has to like make that call too, right? Like, if you get picked up and you have personality issues, maybe now there's teams that have issues and they just deal with it. But maybe like your coach would be like, I'm over your shit, and you're just gone, or like your GM, whatever. Like, I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
And it'll definitely be healthier. I don't know. I agree with the combine will obviously be a thing, but
it's not going to save you.
Yeah, exactly. It's not going to change your personality. Cool. And I think the slap in the face of professionalism will definitely be a make or break for some people.
It's a reality call, that's for sure. Okay, well, let's move on. Let's talk about some of the events. So Apex being the big one right now in Korea. It's coming into the final rounds. We just completed the quarterfinals, I believe, or we had the big quarterfinals, at least the half that had Envious and Rogue, as well as Lunatic High and Kangdu Unsia. So Envious and Rogue had to play each other, which is like, God, really, guys? Why did...
Well, they didn't have to play each other,
but Rogue picked Envious. Rogue picked Envious. Oh, yeah. And boy, did it blow up in their face, too. if you guys haven't watched the VOD here, let me link you the guys the VOD. I mean, it was incredible, like, just by Envious being able to, you know, practice. I don't even know how many days. Was it even a week?
Three days practicing
with Mickey 3 days, and they were able to beat Rogue 3-2, coming back actually down 2-1 or 1-2, and it was shocking. I mean, even like listening to Doa and Monty casting it, I mean, they were casting it from the standpoint like, oh, this is just amazing that Envious is even hanging in all these games and, you know, even getting one off of Rogue. Then all of a sudden they end up winning the last two games on some just amazing plays, especially Mickey's D.Va nukes, like having huge moments, killing three or four guys at times. That was insane. But did you guys get a chance to watch the VODs for the series? Oh, man. What do you guys think?
It was a really good series. If you haven't seen the VOD, just go to twitch.tv/OGN Global, click on videos, go check it out. It's a really exciting match that I would encourage everyone to go watch. Obviously, it's a showcase of D.Va and 76, both teams playing a lot with both of those characters. But also, one thing that really stood out to me was AKM's Pharah. We saw AKM play so much Pharah for Rogue, and he played incredibly well. And it was just amazing that Rogue still lost, even considering, you know, you had Tvik really dominating with 76. You had AKM playing a really interesting Pharah. Obviously, we alluded to this earlier. On the Envious side, Harry Hook, how many months and months and months have we been hearing that this guy has God-tier aim? If only he played DPS for Envious, we could see it. Well, now he's finally playing DPS, and yes, indeed, he is an incredible McCree. I think the one thing I would say about Harry Hook is his aim is insane, but he clearly doesn't have like quite the same game sense as like a lot of other McCrees, especially with his alt. Like Harry Hook's aim was sick, but his high noons like barely did anything ever the whole set. But yeah, incredibly close. Every time they went to 2 CP, I don't want to give too many spoilers, but every 2 CP ended in ties, so it was like tiebreak. Yep. It was like a really, really long best of five. But yeah, everyone should go watch it for sure.
What's nuts to me is that I feel like Envy should have or could have won harder than they did.
Really? Okay.
Like, all right. So one thing I want to point out too is that this team's lived together for almost a year now, or it feels like it's been close to a year. Maybe it's been like 6 months, and a year just feels better in my head, but. They have the synergy. They've been playing forever. Like Harry, I used to pub with them. Like they would pub on the East server back before they moved out to Korea. And like you would see them stacking, and Harry would always play DPS because nobody wants to lose to him pubs. But the way that they switched their roster, like the way that Mickey came in and pushed everyone around, I feel like was like the best case scenario that they could have asked for. Because I talked to Taimu and he was saying like, they tried scrims with Zarya throughout the entire week, and they just lost all of them. Mm-hmm. So they just didn't want to run Zarya at all because they couldn't make it work. And then they put Mickey on this, like, they just let Mickey play as D.Va all the time, and they just won all of their scrims. And, like, the King's Row match was pretty one-sided for Envy. They couldn't finish. Like, they couldn't finish in the three-minute overtime somehow. But I think that was their fault. The Hanamura match, both teams arguably should have capped through the map and then got stuck on, like, the last tick or a clutch team fight. And, like, that wasn't really that close. And then Eichenwald was, like, such a great performance from Envy and, like, such a, I don't know, the whole series didn't feel as one-sided as, like, as people thought. But I think it had a lot to do with the fact that putting Internet Hulk off of the off-tank, like, made a huge difference because his Lucio was so good. I mean, like, you don't see it when you're watching, but, like, I analyzed the VODs last night and his sound barriers were great. His positioning was great. He, like, very rarely gets caught out. And getting him off of the Winston role and onto the shot caller role, I think really, really paid off for them.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, we've seen some questionable play from Internet Hulk on Winston lately, I'll be honest. We've talked about this before on the show. Internet Hulk was the person who put this team together. His teammates credit him for coming up with a lot of their strategies. So it makes total sense for him to be on Lucio. I think that was maybe almost the most impactful switch with bringing Mickey in more than any other player switching around. Maybe it was having Internet Hulk stick to Lucio now.
And they had like this weird issue in the past, and I talked about it yesterday, but they never played. There'd be so many games where Envy would lose, but it's because they just didn't want to go on Reinhardt. Like Hulk didn't want to play Reinhardt. Coco didn't want to play Reinhardt. Coco would wind up playing Zarya, and then you'd see Hulk on Winston because Hulk never wanted to Reinhardt. And then, like, you would lose because you need Reinhardt. So they only ran Reinhardt last night. Like, Coco very rarely switched off, if at all. And it was like a scary performance, man. Like, Mickey's D.Va was insane. Coco's Reinhardt combo with Mickey's D.Va was insane. Like, Harry Hook's aim was arguably the best you'll ever see. Like, he would pop aimbot and his crosshair would still be following the reticle. It was, like, the craziest thing I've ever... It was really eye-opening to watch. Like, it shows how much higher the skill cap of the game can be if that team is winning with a four-day-old roster on a brand-new patch. Like, it was something definitely to, like, be excited for.
Yeah. Manga, did you get a chance to catch the VODs at all or no?
I didn't, unfortunately. I was going to watch it.
Yeah, definitely check it out, man. Yeah, it's definitely some good stuff there. So yeah, so Envious moves on, and they're going to be taking on the winner of the next match, which was in the same bod that I linked. And that's Kongdu Onsia and Lunatic High. And, you know, a lot of people picked Lunatic High, including myself, pre-patch, you know, to actually take this whole tournament. But, man, Kongdu Onsia, it was a pretty close. They were definitely had some close games within it, but they ended up taking the series 3-0, and to a lot of people's surprise, not so much for the folks that have been following the Korean the Korean teams very, very closely, especially since the patch. But yeah, what do you guys think of Kongdu? If you guys got a chance to watch the VODs,
we just we have so much to learn about the Korean scene.
Yeah, seriously, yeah,
because everybody's power ranking was like Rogue, Lunatic High, da, da, da. Like everyone had those two as like the two best teams in the world. You're right, Chris.
Changed.
I mean,
that's changed everything too.
So. That changes everything. Yeah. But the even though it was 3-0, the games were really close. It's not like
I heard it could have gone either way. And
the Li
Zhong
Tower,
it definitely could have gone either way.
Yeah,
definitely could have gone either way.
Watch that Li Zhong Tower series. I mean, that game was really, really good. But
I haven't gotten a chance to catch it. But I will say that there was a match, I think it was Rogue versus Lunatic High before, like whatever they played before the finals of APAC. They like had like a quarterfinal match or something, or like a group stage match. And there was, I specifically remember a game on King's Row where they wanted McCree and May at the same time, but Eska was the only one that could play May. So like Jaehong or... was it Jaehong or Tijun? Lee Tijun. Like one of them had to switch to McCree and they just couldn't do it.
Yeah, they have
like, they were getting beaten by TVX Pharah. Like I specifically remember it. So I'm not surprised that the team, like that they would lose, I guess. But I will say I don't like, I mean, this is like an off topic, but I don't really like the concept of power rankings right now because everyone's like, oh, we're the best team in the world. But then suddenly you lose on a patch. It's like, yeah. I don't know. I like the fact that this game is so young that the patches should be coming more, but I don't know if this is even a topic for tonight, but are you guys okay with the mid-tournament patch? Like, there was a lot of discussion about it.
I don't actually love it, but that's... Yeah, go ahead, Melga.
I mean, I'm not playing in these tournaments, but, like, I don't really like the fact that they have these competitive seasons. Like, they have a time frame for when they shouldn't do stuff. And like, there's 2 weeks left. The people that want to get top 500 are the people that are trying to be like in whatever ranking they want to be are going to be putting in that grind now of all time. And then they just slap you with a meta change.
Yeah.
Like they completely, that's completely different for the most part. Like, and a Reaper is just no longer a thing. Like a Reaper is pretty rare now. Like you don't really see much of him. So like everybody that put in all this time to pick up Reaper, people put in all this time to pick up May, it's just like, it's wasted time. And now you're stuck having a grind soldier. So I'm not a big fan. Like, I like the update itself. I just don't like the fact that they released it mid-competitive season.
Yeah. I mean, they could have waited, like, a week, right? I mean, it wouldn't have been that long.
And, like, the people that are playing in the tournaments would have been, like, irritated, to say the least. But,
I mean, the people in the tournament,
you know, they affected everybody that is not only playing in the tournament, but also plays.
Is there not a tournament client? Because I feel like there is. And that's kind of where my argument was.
There is. Yeah.
I feel like they could have locked Korea's tournaments on that patch.
The tournament client,
like, that's kind of my stance on it.
It's a weird thing though, because like there is a lot of value in having folks watch competitive Overwatch with what they're playing with, like at the time. And the thing about tournaments and organizers, like, they don't actually know a lot of times, like especially Apex, right? It started so long ago now that they of course don't know when these patches are going to come out, and maybe they didn't know when season 2 would end either when they first started it. So having it come in mid tournament, that's going to happen because tournament organizers sometimes won't even go and talk to Blizzard about when their patches will be or whatnot. But Blizzard, with their own competitive season, they know when that's going to happen. That's their own release schedule. And it just doesn't make as much sense for them to just come out with a patch. You know, like, they can be super excited about it. And that's one thing I love about the team, is that they move very quickly and they are very nimble with that. But this is just one thing. This is one instance where it's not the best thing. You know, they could have just waited one more week, you know, with all this excitement, and then, you know, had it match up with their competitive season. But Apex, it still would have screwed Apex's final, you know, semifinals, right? They still would have messed it up regardless. So I don't think that.
That was kind of. I guess. I mean, as far as in the future, I agree. But it's like this tournament. All right, here's, I guess, my stance. I think doing it the last week was weird, and then doing it mid-season is completely fine. Like, wasn't season one? Didn't we start season one with no hero limits? So.
Like, God, was it really?
Yeah.
And then it was like going into Atlantic Showdown that we.
And season two has been the longest. I mean, there's been a lot. I mean, the Anna Reaper thing was a while, it felt like. So I'm down with them doing it. It's just, I understand why. Like, if the tournament's going to do it, you can keep it on the old patch. But I'm at the point now where I think the game is still so young that they should be patching more rapidly instead of doing like a lot of massive changes at once. Go for smaller changes and like smaller iterations. Like, if you only nerfed Anna right now, would that have been that bad? Or if you had done it earlier, maybe this patch wouldn't have been so crazy.
That's kind of another thing. Like, Blizzard themselves said, this is a huge PTR patch. We're going to be trying out some major changes and see how they go. And then they just push the whole thing. Did they not include anything?
Everything got through, I think.
Well, they changed some.
I think they pushed it.
They changed a few things. Yeah. Like, they changed
a few changes, but.
They changed the Torbjorn. Like, Torbjorn used to generate the spawn and setup time. That was pretty crazy.
They did. They did obvious things that were just.
I think Farrah got touched a little bit, but.
But, that's the whole thing. Like, the Anna release, I don't think was that big of an issue because at the time, Zen was still broken. Like, that was the whole thing with Anna, in my opinion. Like, Zen was just so good at the time that nobody really realized how good Ana was.
Do you think it's a, I don't want to say it's a confidence thing, but it almost sounds like a confidence thing in my eyes. Like,
what do you mean by confidence?
Like, because, like, the PTR to me is, because, like, I played a lot of Dota before this and even TF2. Like, TF2 never used the beta client, and Dota, like, only uses beta client for, like, massive changes or new heroes and stuff. Like, when there's obviously going to be huge bugs, not so much balance. And, like, sometimes, I mean, even now, I still question the data that comes back from PTR. Like, if that makes sense. Because most of the time,
nobody plays on PTR. Or not.
And like, teams to stream on it just because of, like, how many tournaments there are right now. I feel like with the Blizzard League, people will play on it more, maybe. But...
I don't know. Maybe you're right, Flame. Maybe there should be some kind of tournament client, but...
I mean, I'm down with them just randomly patching. It's just, I feel like it's a weird idea for me to have to launch the PTR client, because whenever I do it, I feel like the games are so bad. And then, like, they make statements like, the data came back and, like, we really like it. But I know for a fact that, like, none of my games gave any good data. So, like, that's kind of... It's, like, it's weird. It's weird in my eyes, but I don't know.
Obviously they're getting data across the board, right, at different skill levels, I'm like kind of like you guys. When they said that they were going to change a bunch of things, I thought it was like, you know, experimenting with a bunch of things, and you know, they were eventually going to push some of those things, right? But I mean, I think the lesson learned here is that whatever's on the PTR is, you know, they're going to keep tweaking that PTR, and then that's going to be basically the image that they're going to push, or the, you know, the actual build they're going to push to the live server. So take the PTR like that, you know, going, I guess, moving forward, even when they say they're changing a ton of things. I don't know. I'm kind of a fan of them changing a bunch of stuff. Like, I like
that. Yeah, for sure.
I like
it. I just mean, like, just do it, you know? Don't even think about it. Just do it.
Yeah, I mean, like, fix it later. I'm a bigger fan of them, you know, planning like a lot of these changes like they did for this recent one versus only changing one or two things, you know, every so often, because the one or two things doesn't really shake up the meta in a huge way a lot of times. You know, sometimes, you know, somebody will swap like an off tank, we'll swap maybe a DPS character because they've nerfed, you know, McCree or whatever, but this is a big, you know, like the thing that came out here, I mean, we changed the meta in a big way. You know, we talked about a lot of them already, but just like D.Va being so huge now, and I mean, I guess that's mostly the biggest thing is D.Va, but you know, we don't see Reapers very much anymore.
The soldier's
a big thing. Yeah. So,
but I mean, like, if there was a mid patch, like there was just a random patch during, I don't know, a week or two ago or 3 weeks ago, even, like, that was just buff 76's damage by 2% and remove speed from Anna ult, like the game would have been, I don't know, arguably much, much, much more viewable or enjoyable, like, to watch, I guess. From my perspective, anyway, I mean, I don't want to speak for everyone, but
okay, all right,
it's kind of my thinking.
Let's see, Moving on, I think there's a couple other events, the North American events, the Alienware Monthly Minute. Did you guys get a chance to catch the melee a little bit? Ben, you want to update us on that?
Yeah, this was last week now, so yeah. A little bit older, but just good to see the new roster for Cloud9 coming together. They were able to take the win over FaZe. So I don't think we should go too deep into this as we're running out of time here.
Yeah.
But I think the other interesting thing to note from the European monthly melee is that there's a new team that kind of had a breakout performance. It's Bonjour. It's another French team. God, there are so many good French players in this community. And it's some of the old guys from Melty playing on this team. Nico Bod, I think Pipo, I don't know how to pronounce it. I think he played for one iteration of them. They actually ended up beating FaZe in the upper bracket of this tournament, in the first round of the winner's bracket. That's really cool to see. It's just it's great to see when any new teams kind of make another splash. So I think that's really the storyline there.
All right.
Personally.
Cool.
But NIP ended up winning the European side. So.
Yep. NIP still. Are they running triple tank or anything like
that? They're running triple tank.
This is a good time to do it. So.
They've been running triple tank since before Anna was even in the game.
They do it when it's not when it wasn't even cool. Exactly. All right, so let's move on. Let's go straight into viewer Q&A here. And any of you goes, actually not viewer Q&A, I should just call it Q&A since we don't always have just the folks listening are obviously not live viewers. So if you have any questions right now, go ahead and post those questions in the Twitch chat and we'll answer any that we see. And for those of you listening on iTunes or whatnot, go ahead and email those for next week at theoverview@chainmanv.tv, and we'll read those out next week. Any of you guys got questions? Any questions for us? Some of these questions.
We're gonna wait for questions to come in via chat. But I honestly, one thing that I just like popped into my head as I've been playing, I played a bunch over the weekend. Do you guys feel like D.Va is a big part of the reason we're seeing less Reapers? I feel like right now, if there's like a good Reaper, like D.Va has a really good opportunity to counter with all the shield or all the armor she has and the Matrix.
I think if you're gonna remove a Reaper, you like trade it for the Roadhog in most compositions, and like Roadhog is arguably just better than Reaper, I think, right now.
Yeah, pick potential.
So it's like, I don't know that you would swap out the D.Va for the Reaper. I think you'd swap out like the D.Va for the Zarya or like that second Winston, maybe. Like, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that they're hot swappable there. Teams ran Reaper yesterday, I think.
Yeah.
A few of them. Like, I know Taimu had success on it on a few of the maps.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, using defense matrix to eat. I mean, there were so many ults eaten by Mickey yesterday.
It's totally. Great. He would counter
two or three ults at a time with one defense matrix, and you're just like,
even all the hero. Visors, like a lot of Tavik's visor.
He just chased Tavik around the map. It's like, okay. Totally. There was one point where I think AKM hits like a 5-man barrage, and Mickey just walks in front of it. You're like, all right.
And his nukes, man. His nukes were the most effective nukes I've seen in a while for D.Va.
Those nukes were effective because of teamwork.
It was.
I don't know if Monte
him.
And Doa didn't catch it, but like there were subtle little Lucio boops that were making every one of those D.Va ults happen. Anyway, we actually have a lot of questions that just came in, so we'll take a look.
We've got one from Verbalocity. So, what do you think that the spectator? It's like a spectator client, and he says, what kind of things that do they still need? And I will make one comment about Apex's. I feel like we made really big strides with E-League and Atlantic Showdown with just the direction, the director, you know, whoever's directing behind the scenes and what to show. But I feel like the Apex hasn't been great, actually. There's been way too much first-person point of view, and it's hard. I mean, even for somebody that knows the game and doesn't actually even mind first-person point of view, but I just put myself in somebody who's just watching for the first time, and it's like too much Genji, too much Winston's, with Miro, and too much of those things. Like, as great as Miro is, sometimes you just can't show him. I mean, that's just like, you can't do that because it sacrifices the quality of this, you know, spectate.
Yeah, I didn't notice it super hard yesterday. The first match on Ilios, I remember thinking to myself, like, I wish I knew what was going on because they kept, like, toggling between the 276s. So you would only see them fighting each other. And then meanwhile, there's, like, five people dying off in the distance somewhere. But it's an art, to be honest with
totally
you.
Totally, it is.
It's a weird problem to think. Like, even if I were to do it, like, I'm thinking, like, I thought, because I think about it in terms of, like, could I do it better? Because, like, I don't, like, criticizing things usually if I don't feel like confident in them. It's hard. Like, I feel like you could automate spectating, but you would need to like actually have a really, really good understanding of how team fights are going to unfold based on like positioning, ult percentage, and like stuff like that. But like for someone who's not a super high level player, I feel like it's super difficult just to understand. I mean, it'll come with time. I mean, like Dota has like what, two or three people that are just really, really good at it. And it's just like those three people, like there's no one else on their level. So it's definitely like a niche skill that I think someone's going to have to like take the reins on.
I mean, comparing Dota to Overwatch is like not even close in terms of how.
But I'm saying like even like Dota is arguably infinitely easier. And it's there's still only like two or three people that can do it at the level that they need it.
Yeah,
I have one quick gripe about like every single event ever that's happened so far. I feel very strongly about this. If you're in third person free float camera watching a team fight, yes, it is nice to be cinematic and have slow pans and things like that. But you're going in this mode so people can see more of the action. Show it from top down. I don't want to see these like sliding it like coming in.
just revolving.
You could do a slow pan, but do it from top down. You're in that mode to see information. In the beginning of the game, when the teams are setting up, sure, do slow, sweeping, cinematic pans. But one team gets completely wiped and is coming back from spawn, sure, do slow, sweeping pans.
But
if there is
man.
Actually action it's going little, on, just awesome show it from the top down. Nobody is doing this right now.
Yeah.
Like, literally nobody is doing this right now. I feel super strongly that this would make the spectating experience better, but
so a lot of things that, you know, me and Ben were talking about here is more, it has nothing to do with the spectator client. Actually, it has to do with the people operating, you know, the client in the production. So getting back to Verbalocity, I would still like to see some transparent buildings. Like, if you want to do top, it's hard to do top down on maps that have a lot of buildings, and rightfully so, because you can't see any of them. Like Ilios, for instance, like when there's a lot of battles going on, I don't know, just around those little buildings and stuff, it's hard to catch all that stuff. So that's why you kind of have to go first person a lot of times. If we could get some transparency on the ceilings of some of those, I think that would help. That would at least allow them to do some third person, you know, just vantage points or whatnot.
There's a lot of time too. I think if we ever get to a point where we can get like a console and then you can like automate the spectating based on the kill feed, like they do in a lot of other games, and
automating that still is more to do with first person. Like, okay, this guy's about to ultimate, it's going to be epic, and we're going to go to his feed. You know?
If you're not missing kills or you're not missing ults, then I think it's okay to not go third person so much. But
still, like, let's just talk. You know, we'll probably dive. This is the last point I'll make. But let's just say you're Reaper, right? And well, I guess Reaper, there's that kind of third-person follow mode that's pretty nice with Reaper's ult. But there's some ults that even if you go to them, it's not that impressive to see versus third-person, seeing, like, the entire picture and how he's killing everybody, you know, that sort of thing. Like Mei, for instance, you know, any of the crowd control ults, I think, are much better from above, you know, seeing how that's being affected and everybody killing from that. So it's an art. It's a big art, and I don't think it can be automated. I think it will require an incredibly good director, like I've said for months now. And then, you know, the camera folks, I think, are doing a pretty good job right now. But it takes that one person that's calling the screens. I mean, it's like that basketball control center. There's like 9 screens, and he's calling which screen to show at what point. I mean, that's what we're going to have.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that. Yeah. You need like that one person who makes it their thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And he's going to be paid a lot of money.
He'll be everywhere.
Yeah. Okay. Is there another question you see, Ben, by chance?
There's like a ton of questions. Yeah, we're kind of running out of time.
Maybe it's two or three more. That'd be cool. Or unless you have to go. One more.
Ho Muffin asks, is there too much healing in the game, specifically Anna burst heals? I think we kind of were talking about that earlier. It seems like you guys definitely feel this way.
Yeah, it's a stupid amount of healing. Like, that's why triple tank is so good. Like, IP, like you guys were saying, did run triple tank before Anna was a thing, but Anna being in the game just makes it so, so good. And with them nerfing or increasing the ult time, or how long it takes to get ults for everybody, and then some more with Mei, and Mei was another counter to triple tank. You know, there's no reason not to run triple tank.
Yeah, you just answered multiple questions there.
There we go. Yeah.
I feel like we got time for that. I mean, I know for a fact that, I mean, Blizzard watches, they see the strats, they know what's fun to watch, they know what's not. Right now, we're in a good spot, I think, for them to potentially patch, right? Like, season 3 doesn't start for another week or so, December. So I'm just saying, we have a nice like 10-day break right here where they could potentially do it and it wouldn't impact too much.
So remember, go back 3 months or whatever, however long it was ago, they buffed Anna, both the rate of fire for her healing and the number of shots in a clip were both buffed at once. So maybe you roll one or both of those back to pre that buff, and that gets her to like a little bit more
normal. What's the most problematic thing, guys? The grenade or the shot?
It's definitely the nuke.
It's the nuke?
Yeah, I mean, the double heal is just the problem. I mean, her normal healing is pretty good, but it's not, like, crazy good. Like, the problem is that there's too many fights that you can swing by yourself, and I think that that's kind of the game changer. Like, you'll have a Reinhardt on your team with, like, 5 HP, and then the enemy Reinhardt has, like, 100 HP, and they're both swinging their hammers, and you drop a nuke, and then you shoot once, and suddenly your Reinhardt wins that fight, despite the fact he's, like, down 400 HP. And you could, like, argue that that's the hero's kit, but it creates, like, a very unfun...
Well, she's got a very diverse kit right now. Like, it's everything she has is good. Like, literally.
Yeah, all of her abilities are incredible. Yeah, like, you try to dive her, you have to somehow kill her, like, not get sleep darted, not get
hit by a nade that hits.
Yeah, not get hit by the nade. Not just get left click down in 3 clicks. Like, her left click does so much damage.
She's still.
I can rant about Anna's left click for fucking hours. Sorry.
I will say that now, the games I've been playing, like mid masters, when my team loses, I think like 99% of the time it's because their Ana is really, really good. Yeah. You know, I play a lot of Zarya and you get like 100 charge with Zarya and there's like a Reaper or like a Mei or something and your tracking is perfect. Yeah. You're like, oh yeah, this is a for sure kill. And it's just like boop, 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 heal, boop. You're like, those are the games that I lose. I don't lose any other games.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing worse in my eyes than when like you're playing Tracer or Genji and like you make that dive. And suddenly, like, a Zenyatta orb hits the Anna, and then the Anna has, like, double heal from the Zenyatta orb because she nuked the ground, and then suddenly, like, you're running away, and it's helpless feeling, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. It'll definitely be good to see if they tweak her a bit, and I'm sure they're looking at her right now. I mean, Anna's being played. It's one of those things, right? She's being played a ton, and they definitely noticed that. So wouldn't be surprised if that happens. I don't know if it's going to happen before season 3. That's only a week away, and they would have probably announced something.
I wouldn't mind if the nuke just gave better heals and then just didn't change the rate.
You mean it's just a heal itself and not?
Yeah, like it's just like it's not a multiple heal nuke or like a damage nuke or something. I don't even mind that it takes away healing from the enemy team. Like, that's whatever. It's obnoxious, but it's whatever.
It's pretty awesome, too.
I think the double heal is the problem.
Killing her kill ability is very, like, when you engage, like, she's supposed to be flankable, you know, unless you sleep dart the person flanking you. But right now, it's like her grenade allows her to, I think,
live. No, I don't actually play that much Genji anymore, but when I used to play Genji, it's, you don't even want to dive on an Ana. You're terrified. You don't even want to get close to the Ana.
If you play Tracer, if you don't kill her in the first clip, you just rewind and try to do it later. I'll be back. We'll try this again in a few minutes. Like, that's kind of how you have to play now. I mean, you joke, but that's really what's happened. That's kind of why it was nice to watch Mickey win so much last night. Like, people, it was like justice, you know? Like, he would literally just chase Uncle around the map, and you're like,
get her for me, man. Get her.
Get that Andrew. Kill that Andrew.
All right.
So many times last night.
Well, why don't we wrap up? I know there's a lot of other questions, but we've been going pretty long here. But yeah, great show. I mean, this again, we had a ton to talk about, and I think we covered it pretty well. But Manga, got any shout-outs you want to do, or where can people find you?
Shout-outs to my fans. You can find me on Twitter at Mangachu _. Same thing for my Twitch. I try to stream daily at around, like, 1 or 2 EST. Always playing ranked, probably tilted about 90% of the time, but it's fun.
That's the selling point. Mm-hmm. I play tilted, guys. Come and watch me.
I play tilted, and I'm still ranked 1.
And you still rank 1. Holy crap. It's like awesome.
No, I play bad on stream just to like increase everybody's confidence. They're like, wow, this guy's rank 1. And then they just put in like a little bit more effort, and then everybody becomes better.
Lol, rank 1, Pharah.
Yeah, good stuff.
If this is Grandmasters, I don't know what I'm doing in gold. Like that's what my channel says.
Yeah, I get the same thing. It's great. I'm 2500, and you're playing like me. Like,
exactly.
It just hates them, man. I don't know.
I would have hit that Reinhardt charge. I'm diamond.
Yeah. Exactly. Flame, want to do some shoutouts? Where can people find you?
Yeah, my stream has been pretty good the past couple of weeks. I mean, all my supporters are like. We're growing, you know, it's a good feeling.
Yes.
And shout out to you for helping me like with all this and even doing this. This is good.
Yes.
I mean, I get to do my weekly rants and vents and thoughts off my chest in a more condensed, civilized manner.
We have you on here to preserve your mental state.
No, it's good. And I mean, like, I've actually been straying away from playing because I don't want to say I get super toxic, but I get pretty toxic some nights when like the games are really bad and I like can't force myself to enjoy it. So the fact that people watch me do VOD reviews is definitely helping the mental state and like helping me grow as a streamer, player, professional.
No, it's
good stuff,
hear.
Man.
Yeah, good stuff. Fish Sticks, how about you?
Go watch DreamHack this weekend. Yeah. twitch.tv/DreamHackOverwatch, I guess, is probably where it's going to be. Go watch Hexcast, his first major tournament. It should be a pretty good one, although not the most stacked in terms of teams, but we're also to the very end of OGN Apex, so it's semifinals. You just have 2 semifinals left, and would you guess it, Envious versus Kongdu Unsia is there. This is happening in the semifinal, so on the upper side of the bracket, I have no idea what's going to happen. I don't really know much. I don't know anything about these teams.
I actually know nothing.
That part of the bracket's not there as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
I mean, Envious versus Kongdu Unsia is going to be insane. Definitely go watch that game. I'll be streaming potentially tonight. I don't know. Twitch.tv/Fistics. Trying to be a popular streamer too, like these guys.
And I guess note about the whole Kongdu Unsia, is it one of the players, like in an interview, even said that they've never lost to Envious in a scrim. So that should be pretty.
They played with Mickey?
I don't think they played with Mickey yet. No, maybe they have.
I hate statements like that, man. Like they actually made that statement public. It's like, oh, we lost. We won all of our preseason games. It's like, cool, dude. Congrats.
Exactly. It was probably taken
out. See you in the playoffs.
It's like the clickbait is, we've never lost to Envious in a scrim ever or something like that. It's probably taken completely out of context. But it'd be pretty interesting.
I hope they do well. It pays off for them. I'm just
As I'll round things out, thank all 3 of you guys for doing the show today. It was fantastic. And I'm going to be doing another Streamer Showdown Overwatch Edition in about 2 hours. You can check that out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Got Chris Puggett hosting for the first time. It's going to be awesome doing something with Chris there. And then Stir's going to, he's our returning champ from last time. And then Muselk's going to be challenging. And then Yui, one of our favorite Overwatch streamers, is going to be competing. And if you guys haven't seen Streamer Showdown before, it's my game show that I'm doing with Vindexus, where we have these guys, try to test their Overwatch knowledge as well as just some of their abilities to make dank memes. So definitely tune into that in a couple hours. Same stream. It's just right here, twitch.tv/shamanv. And that's going to be it. For those of you that missed any of the show, the VODs will be available on YouTube a little bit later tonight, youtube.com/shamanv. And for those on iTunes, you can catch that tomorrow once the feed takes usually 12 hours to update. You can catch it there, or you can get the direct feed too, which I'll post a little bit later. I always post all the show topics and show notes or whatnot on shamanv.tv. So you can find that on the website. But that's going to be it for the overview this week, guys. So for Mangachu, Flame, Fishsticks, and myself, Chan Man V, we'll see you next time. Later.